Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm happy to be here. Several things have happened this morning that have made me a little teary, so which is kind of contradictory to the message I'm about to give. So I'm sort of looking for my grounding so that I can make that segue into a really profound and probably loud message. So if you're in the sound booth, you're going to want to make sure I don't go too crazy because this is a topic I'm very excited about. You know, I choose these talk titles well in advance, and the title of the message this week is The Defiance of Despair. Oh, yeah, I know. I've been so excited, so looking forward to giving a big, bold message where I can really put all of my passion and my emotion into such ideas, because I noticed as I was looking at through an old journal of mine that last January, so we came up with this idea that the theme for the year would be what matters most. And we're doing, it's so fun to listen to what Reverend Clyde's going to comment about every Sunday and in connection to that theme. But I found a journal this week. I was rereading something that I wrote last January, and I found this as one of my goals: to help create an uprising of hope and new possibilities. I want to, you know, that is what I want to bring, not just to this community, but to everywhere I go in the world. I want to create sort of a little cyclone of stir things up in such a way that it causes people to have an uprising or feel the energy of that uprising I create in my own cyclonish way of positivity, an uprising of hope and new possibilities. And so it's very appropriate to fit in with the message that I want to share today, the stories I'm going to tell this morning, and even better than that, the quotations from Dr. Ernest Holmes from the Science of Mind textbook. I'm always amazed how I get an idea and then I am directed, I am divinely guided to the perfect quotation that will complement what it is I have to say. So here's the quote I found, and I wanted to also share with you that I'm working out of primarily the fourth chapter of the Science of Mind textbook. And now remember, in those first four chapters of the textbook are the basics. You know, there's a chapter on what is it? What is this thing called life? What is God? There's another chapter on what it does. And today, the chapter that I'm speaking from is a chapter on how to use it. I bet we could use that as our theme every single Sunday. And really grow, just really grow from looking again and again at how there's this essence, this energetic power in all the universe, this rhythm, this harmony of life. And the more that we study it in nature and we come to understand it, we can apply it in practical ways in our own life. So here's the quote I found on page 49, actually precedes that chapter by a bit. But here's the starting quote that really tickled me. It's like sometimes he uses my voice is what it feels like if you're me. So Holmes said, we should say to doubt, so he's talking about doubt, he's talking about negativity, he's talking about our fears, any of the ways that we carry the weight of the world around. We should say to doubt, where did you come from? Who is your father? In other words, who created you? You have no place in my mind, so get out. Just get out. I mean, this, he's so great. I loved it. He said, you should say to your fears and to negativity, where did you come from? Who is your father? You have no place in my mind, so get out. So that's what I want to talk about today, is to be being defiant in the face of doubt, in the face of fear, in the face of some of the everyday challenges where we are faced with, we're tempted to feel like life's a little overwhelming. Maybe we're a little paralyzed by the fear of something we have to do in the morrow, or maybe we're just challenged in some way by a decision we have to make you know what? No, you have no place in my mind. I'm going to turn to God, turn to light. I'm going to allow the power and the love of Spirit itself to move through me, express as me. You don't belong here. We gotta find someplace else to play. So I just would remind you that we don't believe or teach about an opposing force to God or to our good. But I love the image this gives me. Isn't it just a flare, like, get behind me, Satan? You know, that's what I love about it. I'm an old respecter of Scripture, you might say. So the bottom line is that we don't want to be confused by any of the conditions or situations in our life that look out of order. When we're going through something in our life that feels not quite right, I'm going to use the word disharmonious because it's so much better than any other of the negative things I could think of, because it takes us right back to knowing what the opposite of disharmony is. The opposite of disharmony would have to be harmony, right? And Holmes says in this chapter, disharmony is not of God. Therefore, it's subject to change and it won't last, right? So anything that feels incongruent or out of harmony with your natural good is just something that's passing by. Because we live in a world in physical form, and so things happen. Sometimes we bump up against each other in terms of the way we relate to each other. But always, 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 any evidence or suspicion or perception of disharmony, at the very least, reminds us of the opposite. Oh, look at the way I'm looking at the world right now. I'm seeing a lot of things that look like they need to be fixed. I'm not seeing the beautiful divine harmony, the perfect order, the way that this theme of unity shows up in all of life, that our goodness is always a part of our experience. So it may feel sometimes like it is apart from us, and yet we know the truth of the presence of God is that it is always right where we are, and so therefore so is joy, and so is goodness, and so is delight, and all of those great desires of our heart. On page 53, he goes on to say, the universe cannot be divided against itself. The universe cannot be divided against itself, so there has to be order and harmony at the very center of every situation. And that also tells me that there is always a divine solution to anything that I might call a problem or a challenge. There is always a divine solution. So in the words of Dr. Ernest Holmes, we should be able to look at a wrong condition with the knowledge that we can change it. This is the most beautiful part of our teaching, is that Holmes so often said, this glorious synthesizer, he said, I didn't do anything new. I just studied all the great teachers and I came up with my own little sort of formula about it. You know, he never wanted to be put up on a pedestal. I'm really bad at keeping him up on that pedestal, but his writings so feed me, and I am ordained minister in this movement, so I guess it behooves me to speak to you about such things. But I love that in our teaching, we use that phrase that he said all the time, that there's a power in this universe. It is a power for good. It is always right where we are, and we can use it. And this whole teaching is based on that idea of how do we now use it? How do we apply the principle in a practical way in the way that we live our lives? So when he says we should be able to look at a wrong condition, I want to remind you that we're not a feel-good Pollyanna kind of spiritual movement. We're more than positive thinking. I think we're really good at positive thinking. Many of us are. But we are so much more than that, because the beauty of the gift for me is that this man, in this very chapter, this man, Dr. Ernest Holmes, spoke about the importance of looking at the discordance, look at the discordance so you can name it and you can now know where you're missing spiritual principles, in the same way that I use the term disharmony, so that you will be easily moved to see that harmony is the divine characteristic or quality that, that we're wanting to call forward. If you're seeing it missing, then that's what you want to call forward. So he says we should be able to look at a wrong condition. So I want to ask you, you know, think about that. What does that mean? What is a wrong condition? And my response, my personal response, is that a wrong condition is anything that you personally name less than it could be. Anything in your life that could be a little bit better. That's where we want to shine some light and stretch our own consciousness to be willing to receive at a higher and greater level. So, defiance of despair. I love the title of this talk. This is so fun. Defiance of despair is a pretty bold theme. Especially when we look at despair as hopelessness. I think of hopelessness. You know, some people in New Thought have a problem talking about hope. You know, it's like, no, we don't want to hope. We don't want to wish. But I want to say that if I look at the word hopelessness, it helps me see that the opposite of hopelessness is to be not trapped in a despair kind of mood or situation or way of viewing life. It then brings this great amount of light and a different perspective to whatever you're moving through. In this place of hopelessness, and by the way, we have all been there. If you have, you know, a human body and some days a bad hair day can feel pretty hopeless. But you know what I mean? We have all experienced despair. What I'm suggesting is that it is not wrong. You have not done anything wrong if you are experiencing despair in your life in any way. But what I'm saying is we have these fabulous tools that point us in a better direction so that we can rise above that hopelessness. Because with hopelessness comes, well, misery, you know, angst, torment. We're really uncomfortable in that experience of feeling hopeless. So if we are going to create an uprising of hope and possibilities, we have to defy despair, which means we have to refuse to accept it. First, you might have to acknowledge it, look the discordance, name it, and no, yes, not for me. How did you get in my mind? Get out, right? So we're going to use this in a really practical way. We teach that this gorgeous spiritual philosophy teaches that when your life looks bleak or dark or incongruent in any way, stop. You know, that's my favorite message to you. Stop. Take a breath. Stop, breathe, and choose again. So in that place of stopping, I think that's that point where he hollers that out. You know, stop, get out of here. You have no place in my mind. And then that creates some spaciousness, some different opportunities, because we've sort of put a halt to the kind of energy that keeps a place dark. You know, in the way that Holmes words that command, it's as though it gives me this feeling of waking up and realizing, remember I've been talking about that word this month, realizing, you know, recognizing, but really embodying this great truth that darkness is not the truth of my life. It's a fact, there's day and there's night. We know there are facts of life, but it's not the truth of my being. And so, therefore, I can make the decision that dark thoughts have no place in my thoughts. I can stop and say, what else is possible? What else is going on here? There's always information in it. So we all have experienced periods of despair, perhaps. We've all certainly gone through difficult circumstances, and I just want to remind us that that idea of darkness is an illusion that disappears in the presence of light. Right? And here's something you can take with you. No matter how dark or dreary or hopeless a situation may seem to you, the light is always only a single thought away. Do you feel that? Can you feel the beauty in that, the simplicity in that? The light is always only a tiny thought away. Now, I'm going to tell you a story that you already know. Everybody knows this story. This is a story of a true life happening that unfolded in the year 2003. It's a story of Aaron Ralston. And if you don't recognize his name, he's the guy that went hiking in the canyon in Utah and all alone, didn't tell anybody where he was, and a tragic thing happens. A big boulder falls and pins his hand down. And he's trapped there for 5 days before he frees himself. So I'm going to tell you this story in a sort of a different version. I'm not going to go into how he got free. You know how that all turned out. He wrote a book. There was a movie. How many of you watched the movie? I couldn't watch the movie. I had no desire to see that movie. Anyhow, he's 28 years old. And he's the part of the story that most people don't aren't aware of is that he came from an interesting family, and he was very smart and studied and balanced. He was not only, he graduated from Carnegie Mellon University with a degree in mechanical engineering, but he had a second degree in French. And he had a minor in music. He played the piano. So can you see what I'm talking? He was really versatile in the way he showed up as a human being. And also loved, had this great, great love of the outdoors. And so he goes through school. He gets a great job in the corporate world as a mechanical engineer. And for 5 years, he's miserable because his real passion is outdoors. So he retires from that world, and he pursues a life that is perfect for him. And now he has this goal. He wants to hike all the mountains in Colorado, and he has these lofty goals of all the great things he wants to do, and he loves climbing rocks. And so he takes an adventure. It was not unusual for him to do this. He goes on, be careful, Reverend Clyde. It just occurred to me that I'm talking about this on a day when he's leaving to go hiking in a canyon. Take burritos, that's all I'm going to say. Actually, I'm going to say more, but... burritos, it's true. It might be the whole moral of the story, I don't know, but I think there's some wisdom in it. So he goes up into Utah, into the Slot Canyons, and he loves to do this rock climbing and rappelling and all that stuff, and he somehow dislodged a giant boulder that now comes down and stops, because the Slot Canyons are thin, it gets lodged, but his hand is pinched, is trapped. So he does everything he can. For 4 days, he tries to get free of being trapped by this boulder. And he had his backpack, he had water, and 2 burritos. I'm telling you, Reverend Clyde, you just might want to take a burrito.
Let somebody know where you're going.
So he lives for 4 days, trying to get out of his predicament, and at the end of the 4th day, he's finally out of water, he's eaten both of the burritos, and he realizes his plight doesn't look very good. It's not very promising that he's going to get out of there. And so he carves in the sandstone wall that he's pinned to, he carves his name and his birth date and the date of the next day, because that he assumes that's when he's going to die. And then he has his cell phone, and he can't call home, but he makes a recording. He uses his phone to make a recording, and he says goodbye and to all his loved ones, his family and his friends, and tells them how much he loves them. And he assumes he's going to die. And so that night, as he's sort of dozing off in this half-sleep kind of thing that happens, especially when you're dehydrated and you're, you know, in dire conditions like that, he's dozing off, and he had, some say it was a hallucination, some say it was a dream. He called it a vision. So in that twilight, I call it twilight sleep kind of place, where you can kind of manipulate your dreams. I don't know what happened to him, but he had a dream or a vision of himself with one arm playing with his soon-to-be child, his not-yet-born child. And he woke up the next morning, and because he had had that vision, he had hope. Something changed. But what's really interesting to me is that he says when he woke up that morning, it wasn't like it was a life or death situation like it had felt like before. He woke up desperate for freedom. Freedom is a quality of God. Freedom may be the most important quality of God. Freedom is mentioned 8 times on the first page of the Science of Mind textbook. You guys know that. I say that a lot. Freedom. He woke up with this strong desire to be free. And in that space of opening up to something other than what he had been doing, in other words, he had been trying to figure out how to get out of this predicament, and he had been working at it, he prepared himself to leave this message for his loved ones. But that next morning, after he'd had that vision, he said he had an epiphany, and it was his term. He used the word epiphany. I had an epiphany. I had an aha moment. I looked up epiphany. And the best definition said, it's to be struck with a life-changing realization that changes the rest of the story. Ooh. Ooh. Remember, we've been saying the last couple weeks, I've been saying, we have the power to always say, this is not how the story is going to end. And that's what he did. So he has this epiphany. He has this great realization. It's like he was downloading information from the divine or from the universe or whatever you want to call it. And it was actually, it's creepy, but it was a step-by-step how to move through what he was called to do next in order to obtain the freedom that he desired. Because he didn't know how to do it. He downloaded information, this universal information came to him as an epiphany as to what he was to do next. And he had in his bag, hope you have one of these too, Clyde. He had one of those, they called it a multi-use tool. It almost sounded like they didn't want to give it a brand name, but I'm thinking it must have been like a Swiss Army knife or something. Or a what? A Leatherman. Oh, they actually, I think they did say something about a Leatherman. And he said, but it wasn't an important, expensive tool. It was a multi-use tool he got for free when he bought a $15 flashlight. And he freed himself on the fifth day of being trapped. He was dehydrated. He used, hey, you know, Clyde, you know how you got that tube in your backpack for your water stuff? He used that as a tourniquet. Saved his life. He saved his own life. He rappelled 65 feet down that face of the rock. He walked 6 miles. He hiked 6 miles in 4 hours until he came into contact with a little family of tourists, a man and a woman, his wife, and their small child. And they were visiting from the Netherlands, visiting the beautiful canyons in Utah. And they called help, and he lived to tell the story. He didn't just survive. He had defiance against despair, against not making it out of that canyon at some point. You would have to do that. Most of us, thankfully, we will not be, you know, put in that situation, except perhaps Reverend Clyde later in the day. And so what's the lesson here? You know, I mean, Janice said it well, don't hike alone and, you know, tell people where you're going to be. And that really is an important lesson there. But you know, have a burrito, have a multi-use tool. You need something to, we always need that way to be nourished, but remember that he opened himself to the divine wisdom and he saw that he had with him everything he needed. So the lesson, I think, is, you know, we don't give up hope. To have defiance of despair is to say that there is a way to face any kind of darkness, any kind of fear, any kind of doubt, any kind of negativity where we can go, wait a minute, I'm going to look at this discordance. I'm going to look at this disharmony. Oh, Who are you? What are you doing here? You have no place here. Get out. And then we start again. Defiance, by definition, this really tickled me, is to be boldly disobedient to what others consider normal. Amen. See, I don't like to hang, right? Defiance, by definition, is to be boldly disobedient to what other people consider normal. Don't hang around people and try and be normal like they are. Be you. Yeah, be who you are. He used his boldness to look at what was wrong. He made a decision, it's not going to be the end. He woke up on day 5, determined to be free. That's a quality of God, I'm just saying. And so it's not to say we won't have desperate moments in our life. What we're saying here is that to be defiant is to say you have a commitment to use a desperate moment to advance your own well-being. Right? You find yourself face-to-face in a desperate moment. You use that moment to advance your own well-being. That's important. Write that down if you're taking notes. So we're saying that there is a way. It is a way, you know, like sometimes I get really excited up here and I like to stomp my feet, and I like that the thing is hollow. Did you know, Lee, that the thing is hollow? And if you stomp your foot, it makes, you know, yeah, it makes good noise. Feels good. Did you ever stomp your foot when you were giving talks up here? Oh, he just give me the thumbs up here. We draw our line in the sand, right? Like he carved his name in the rock, but we draw our line in the sand and set a boundary and we say enough. That's what Holmes is talking about when I'm sharing all these quotes with you. Enough. We declare the truth. We set a boundary for exactly how far we're going to go with our high drama. And I can speak from great experience about high drama. I love, you know, I'm a bit passionate of a person, and I know a thing or two about high drama, and here's what I want to tell you is don't try and take your high drama away if you were born with it. You're supposed to use it for good in some way. And so what I think is that sometimes when it appears the high drama of a situation, whether it's yours or something you're watching unfold, sometimes you can catch the tail of that high drama, and though it looks like the high drama is taking everybody down a hole, you can redirect that energy. Think about it. You could take the very energy of something you might name high drama, and you can turn the whole ship around, right? Or you can take the energy, if we want to use that metaphor of life as like the highway, we're on a journey, and it's the highway of life. I was thinking it's like a James Bond movie, right, honey? We have every James Bond movie ever made, and he still has to tape them when they show up on channels. But we like James Bond. We like James Bond in our family. And what I know about a skilled race car driver is Gary's not here today, is he? Oh, it's such a shame. Gary, the race car driver, would love this part of the message. So you're driving, and you're going through town, and you're running from the bad guys, but a skilled driver knows how to take that energy and throw that car into a power slide at the very last minute, and they are always pointed in the right direction to get to safety. Freedom. Use the energy that's there. You may feel paralyzed, but you are not paralyzed. It is just a temporary appearance. It will pass. Within the parameters, listen carefully to this. I think this is really, I kind of wowed myself when I wrote this. Within the parameters of the precise science of this faith, the science of mind, this faith that we stand upon, right within the parameters of all of that, is everything we need. We do our work in the law as we stand on the science of this faith. Amen. It is scientific. It is exacting. It works. and you have to use it if you want to make it work. Holmes said, be careful not to indulge in too much theory and not enough practice. Right? You can read and read and read and read and read, but be careful. Too much theory, you need practice. We only know as much as we can prove in demonstration, and once you have proven it, you got it. That's why it's called the science of mind. In that same chapter on how to use it, on page 53, he's talking about the discordant fact, and he gives this gorgeous illustration. I'm so happy I rediscovered this. God doesn't punish the mathematician who fails to find the right answer to a math problem. God doesn't punish the mathematician if the mathematician can't find the right answer. But the mathematician will punish herself if she tries to solve it and tries to solve it and tries to solve it. There's sort of a self-imposed punishment in that predicament of thinking you can't find the right answer. But the truth is, the answer is always there, right? You may not be smart enough to take on trigonometry or even say it. But you don't have to be. The answers are already there. So the thought, this is Holmes, the thought of the unsolved problem will punish you until you apply the right principle. It's simple. It's really not all that complicated. I was thinking about, you know, it's like, that was such a good movie. Wasn't that actress in that other movie called... I don't remember the name of that movie. What was her name? Doggone it. She was in that movie with that guy. You know that guy that used to be in Friends that, and you go deeper and deeper. And now we have this whole crazy new world where we just go, Alexa, tell me the answer. And then some voice comes out of who knows where. And she's become our higher power. She knows everything. So, you've tricked her before, huh? Yeah. Be careful. She might get even with you. So I want to close with a story that may be a little more relatable. Most of us are not, other than Reverend Clyde, will not find ourselves in that predicament. But we all face this experience of aging. And so I want to end today by telling you about another man. His name is Angelo Roncalli. And Angelo Roncalli is a man who, much like myself, he kept a diary for 60 years. 60 years he had a journal that he wrote in on a regular basis. And when he was 64 years old, he wrote in his journal about the challenges of aging. So by the time we reach 64 years old, don't brag that you're older. I know most of us here probably are. Many of us are. But he wrote about that way you start to notice you just don't quite have the vigor and the vitality that you used to have. And he was writing about how if you compare it to how you felt as when he was a younger man, he said, I just don't have the same vigor that I used to have as a younger man. Little did he know that 13 years later, when he was 77 years old, he would receive a call. He got a call from the Holy Roman Church to be the next ruling pope. In 1958, he became Pope John the 23rd. 77 years old before he took the position. When he was 81 years old and serving as Pope, he wrote these words, I have an immense amount of work to do. I have all this work in front of me, and it has to be carried out in front of the whole world, watching. Everybody's watching and waiting and looking at me. But as for me, I feel like Saint Martin, who neither feared to die or refused to live. Beautiful words. So never doubt what's possible. I urge you to speak to any negativity that you notice pops up in your thinking and just scream at it if you desire. Stomp your foot if it works. Lay your line in the sand. Make a very clear boundary. Get out. I rule my mind. Let us be defiant to falsehoods. Please choose the good you desire. Practice using the principles that we teach. We have something going on here nearly every day of the week. Know that you can indeed evict from your mind anything that does not belong there, and you get to make that choice. Remember that God is for you. The universe is for you. Life supports you and is for you. And in the words of Ernest Holmes, remember at all times, such a beautiful quote, Spirit is always nurturing the seeds of rebirth in any decline. Let's create an uprising of hope and of new possibilities, and let's be bold in the way that we do it. And so let's just change gears a little bit and move into that sacred place of prayer. I would invite at this time ministers, practitioners, please stand and surround the room. Take a nice, deep, cleansing breath. And just image in your mind that all the words that have been spoken this morning are just falling around the room, wherever they may. And that you have this ability to reach out and grab that gem of truth that is yours. Take that truth and hold it. And we remember together that there is no place that God is not. That right here, in this very room, is the presence of the Most Holy. It is the infinite wisdom of all the universe. It is love. It is joy. It is beauty. It is truth. It is that activity of life that we recognize, we sense. And as we crispen our awareness of that divinity within us, we can feel that love within us. I feel the love of God within me. And I know it is that very essence of healing. It is that truth of broadening our perspective so that we might see life through holy eyes and realize something brand new. I feel that love of God, and I remember again, it is the most powerful force in all of the universe. It is that kiss of life, that breath of divinity that awakens us. Even now, we're awakening, we're opening, we're realizing greater and greater truths. We're allowing our consciousness to grow, to expand, so that we might embody even a greater experience of this thing we call love, this thing we call life, this gorgeousness that is the joy of all good. And so, what a gorgeous day to look at defiance as a beautiful disobedience, where we will not be average. We will not follow the norm. We will open ourselves to that which Spirit would have us receive. And in this very moment, we become vessels. We open ourselves to receive that grace that is flowing, that is pouring, that is streaming into our lives, into this room, into this community, into the soul of this community that we call the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. And we receive, we accept, we embody all of this goodness so that we might be the hands of God and the feet of God, that we might align our mind to the mind of God so that we can download these divine truths, that we can know that there is a way for us to walk through our lives, putting one foot in front of the other, anticipating in joyous expectation the divine good that is already given. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. Thank you, life. We receive, we accept, we know that it is good, and we allow ourselves to empower the message of this goodness that allows people to have hope again, to see the light, to be open to the love, and to be a part of the grand and glorious change of this changing culture of life. We are relevant, we are here, we are ready to do the things we have been called to do. And so we receive this great, immense healing as the truth and the wholeness of our being is revealed. And in that spirit of deep gratitude, I simply release the words of this prayer, knowing that in truth, it is already done. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.